Our next guest says the economy could benefit from functional inefficiency. In fact, that's the name of his latest book. Peter Wenz joins us. He's an emeritus professor at the University of Illinois Springfield. Peter, your book is also subtitled The Unexpected Benefit of Wasting Time and Money. And of course, that seems contrary to everything that we are taught. So tell us what you mean.
Well, I mean that wasting time and money can sometimes help us to reduce unemployment. Unemployment is an endemic problem in our society because we can produce things, goods, and even some services with less and less labor time. So there's a tendency for developments in technology to throw people out of work. And that's because of greater labor efficiency. By doing some things inefficiently, we can create employment and reduce unemployment. There are other ways also to reduce unemployment besides inefficiency. For example, we can idle workers. We do that a great deal. Over the last 150 years, the work week and the work year has many fewer hours in it than it did in the past. Americans used to work 70 hours a week, then 60. Now we're down to about 40. But we do this without unemployment and the horrible emotional effects and financial effects of unemployment if we pay people enough for their 40 hours a week. So one way that we combat unemployment is through idling workers, and that's not necessarily inefficient if the people's well-being is improved by doing so.
Now, if I'm a business owner, I might hear that and I might think, this guy wants to raise my costs to a point that I can't compete. How would you respond to that?
Well, some things that we buy in a competitive context, our cars, most of our material goods. And efficiency is absolutely important in those contexts. But some things we don't choose as a consumer. For example, we don't choose the transportation system that we have as consumers. We choose the car. We don't choose how much cars are used in our society. So we can have a great deal of inefficiency in the transportation system, and we do. I have a chapter in my book about that, without creating a competitiveness problem, because the other countries with whom we compete internationally also have very inefficient transportation systems, not quite as inefficient as ours, but close enough. So, and that inefficiency creates a lot of jobs. For example, if we moved freight from California to Illinois primarily by freight train, not only would we save a lot of fuel, but also it would just take many fewer workers. We have about 3 million people who are truck drivers. A lot of those people would have to lose their jobs. So the inefficient system has those unexpected benefits, and that's the function of a lot of that inefficiency, because if you tried to take it away with a new system, truck drivers would be sorely hurt, and they'd have a lobbying group to keep the inefficient system in place.
We're talking with Peter Wenz. He's an author of a book called Functional Inefficiency. He's also an emeritus professor at the University of Illinois Springfield. Your book talks a lot about simplifying our lives, maybe working less. Seems like we are all working all the time. Seems like we never get away from that. Why doesn't this happen? Because most people probably would be in favor of a little bit of a less hectic work schedule.
Well, the Simplify movement has been around for at least 30 years. And its proponents keep saying, oh, we're on the verge of a great breakthrough. Americans want to simplify. And then a decade goes by and people have bought more goods. They're in greater debt. They're working more hours. This suggests that we don't really want to simplify. We like the idea of doing it, but not the actuality of doing it. Also, a simplified lifestyle would mean less consumer demand. Consumer demand is the main engine of economic stability and growth. Were that to be reduced significantly, if a lot of people were to simplify, we would have a lot of trouble having economic growth, which would mean that tax revenues would decrease. Decreased tax revenues would mean that we'd have to increase tax rates at a time when people are trying to work less. The math is pretty poor there, and we already have deficits at the federal level. And, of course, we know that our state budget is having troubles as well.
Well, as we said here in Springfield, a lot of government workers in our area and are listening in. You talk about the public sector as well. How would the public sector fit in to this idea?
Well, one way to combat unemployment and improve efficiency is by concentrating our efforts on more public goods, goods that free enterprise won't produce because you can't own them individually, such as the roads and the bridges and the ports. But also, those are the physical public goods. The electricity grid needs to be improved. It takes a lot of work to do that. That would provide a lot of jobs. That would be a lot of income. Also, the human infrastructure. Improving education from the age of 6 weeks old. Starting that process of public involvement in helping infants even to start getting ready to learn language, to be well fed, to be prepared for preschool, to have universal preschool, and then in school, smaller class sizes. All of this creates enormous potential for employment, to reduce unemployment, but also to create efficiency, because then we'd have fewer dropouts, we'd have our crime rates would go lower. More people would buy houses, housing prices would be maintained. So there are lots of good things that can come from this kind of investment.
But wouldn't that also require more taxes, more investment?
Yes. The investment would, because they're public goods, they're not going to be the kinds of things in which individuals invest, as in, for example, the stock market. So it would have to be a public investment. And that's probably why we lag behind other countries in the development of some of these things, including some public transportation in municipal areas, in metropolitan areas.
Well, a lot of the changes that you discuss in the book might be tough to accomplish as well, just because it really, like you said, it requires a different way of thinking than the way we're brought up. The, you know, the scrap and go as much as you can, make as much as you can type of mentality. What is a good first step, though? You know, if you could make something happen today, what would be the first step you would take toward this?
Well, I think the first step would be to look back at what we've done as a nation. Right now, for example, regarding our physical infrastructure, we're not really maintaining it. The Association of Engineers nationally has blistering reports about it. Yet, we're a country that built that infrastructure that we're now not maintaining. So we certainly knew at one time that we needed to build the interstate system, for example. We were leaders in railroad development in the 19th century. So this is not out of character for the American public. Abraham Lincoln was very interested in those kinds of projects, in fact, the railroads in particular that he authorized. So we just have to get back to that kind of enlightened self-interest which is necessary for the economy to grow. It was bipartisan, Republicans and Democrats recognize the need for government involvement and therefore the need to pay higher taxes. And of course, people did pay higher taxes, for example, when the interstate system was being developed. In the Eisenhower administration, the top tax rate was 91%.
So the hurdle is really getting people to think about it in a bigger sense, maybe not in today's, like what it's going to hit me in my pocketbook today, but really what it might do for society and in the future.
Yeah, and for future generations, yes. But we have done that in the past. When you support public education, it's possible that you don't have children yet, or that you won't have children, or that your children go to a private school. You're too old. Your children are out of school. And yet people support public education in general in the United States. They have done. We've been disinvesting in that.
And how does the environment come into this as far as this type of growth?
Well, many environmentalists claim that we can't have indefinite economic growth because the Earth simply won't allow for that. We consume a lot compared to people in other countries, a lot of energy. We don't burn as much coal as China, but we're second. And so they worry that any talk of economic growth employing more people will be environmentally disastrous. And I think that's wrong. If we build the right kind of infrastructure for energy and transportation, for example, and emphasize our economic growth in services, which is still already the area of greatest employment in the United States, then with a more efficient electric system, power system, transportation system, we can grow indefinitely in environmentally friendly services and have our gross domestic product just continue to go up and up and up, because the gross domestic product is a measure of money throughput, not material throughput, which the environmentalists are worrying about.
So functional inefficiency may lead to efficiency.
Yes, exactly.